Good evening. Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
It's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock. And this is the ABD guidebook class. And we have a spectacular adventure that has remained hidden in a certain way. We open up, you know, I open up these books, Pat, and it's like this whole world comes alive that has not, I haven't read this for decades, I think. And yet now I open it up and it's just quite interesting where we're at. And one of the things that we can notice is that the names of the books are morphing a little bit. You know, the first several are single name entities or attributes of God, and the last couple we're noticing are two names.
Double whammy.
Well, what it is that there's the polarities. The polarities of these attributes are coming to bear, and that's what he's demonstrating for us as we get to these books. Like the last one, which we had, was Ur-Kafid and Ur-Rafi. And now the 18th book of the dead, called the book of Ul-Muizi and Mutil. Now, and those are the, they're both different parts of the same phenomena in a certain way. Are you near your computer? Of course you are, George.
Yeah.
Can you go on the Wings of Chaos site?
Yeah.
And look under ABD Guidebook, and at the very bottom, you're going to see the 99 names.
Okay.
Tell me when you've gotten there.
What if he disappears into the 99 names?
He's got his feet in both worlds.
Okay, well, once again, I'm looking for...
At the very bottom, you're going to see the 99 names of God.
Under the ABD guidebook?
Yeah, touch ABD guidebook, and the down arrow will... You see it at the very bottom?
I do.
Click on that, please.
Okay.
Does it work?
Hold on, I'm getting there. Boy, why is this not? Oh, I see, I got it. Oh, name, book 99, Names of God. Okay,
right.
I'm there.
So go about, it'll go down about halfway, and you're going to see this particular name, Muiz.
Let's see if I can.
I can't tell you the number because I forgot, but it's not linear.
Okay.
Then Mufil.
Hold on just a sec. Sorry to hold us all up.
It's very worthy.
You're making a move in a, what is it when you go this way? You're making a lateral move.
Right.
Holding
right.
Before you.
Very good. Geez, I would have expected it to. Oh, here we go. So, and frankly, I'll, you know, not to surprise you, but number 25, Al Mu'iz, but not the second, Muthil, which is actually listed as number 26. So, in the names, it's 25 and 26.
That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. And would you read the descriptions following each name, please? Say the name and then the description, if you would, please.
So, number 25, Al-Mu'iz, the giver of greatness in the world to whom he wills. The giver of greatness in the world to whom he wills. And then 26, Al-Mudhil, the ruiner.
Okay. That's what I wanted us to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to, if you'll go ahead and Pat and I are going to read a couple of verses.
Okay.
If you would pull up the email I sent, if that's available to you.
Absolutely.
I'd appreciate it, okay?
I've got it.
And
right now.
You want to get us that?
Sure.
Okay, are you ready for us, Dan?
The 18th Book of the Dead, called the Book of Umuiz Mutil. One, it is I who give the kingdom to whom I wish and take it away from whom I wish. In one whose heart has been unveiled by the subjugation of material appetites and the end of ignorance, he can know the grace of the imminent presence of God if so he wills it.
Two. Man has within him the power to raise himself above the material appetites of the human world and of the brute world, and so he can be raised also to the kingdom through his own effort. Let's pause there.
Mm-hmm.
And do you happen to have that up yet?
Hey, I sure do.
Okay, I can't remember what I said. The image that I selected was the image of St. Francis.
That's right.
St. Francis of Assisi. In the Western monastic tradition, there are three primary vows that the nun or monk must make. One is the vow of chastity, mm-hmm. the vow of poverty, and the vow of obedience. There are other vows. Those are the primary ones that come to play. And for me, when I read this, I was struck by, this is the vow of poverty at work. And then, what did I say right after the picture?
So you've extracted a verse from Luke 9:24 A and B, which
okay.
should be familiar to everyone. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self?
And then I think I repeat verse 1 that we just read.
That's right, book 18, verse 1. It is I who give the kingdom.
Thank you. Thank you for that, George. What I was struck by, if I may, Pat, I mean...
Please do.
Yeah. is the second sentence in this verse,
mm-hmm.
and I want to explode it a little bit. It says, in one whose heart, listen very carefully, has been unveiled by the subjugation of material appetites and the end of ignorance, he can know the grace of the imminent present of God. That just blew me away. I mean, it just, if we are able to remove ourselves from the appetites, then the heart can be unveiled. I mean, wow. In the stories about St. Francis, he was actually from noble birth.
Correct.
And he was, that's when Italy was mostly city-states. It hadn't formed as the full nation. And he was quite a nobleman. And he was struck by the poverty of a certain person, exactly like the Buddha, when he finally, Siddhartha, was allowed to leave the city, and he saw the impoverished and in ill and the dead, the suffering of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
And he literally gave his robe to this peasant and went out and founded the Order of St. Francis of Assisi. And his friend was Claire in the life, and she started the Order of the Sisters of Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And these are two prominent, and the Franciscans are a major, major force. But it's rooted in this idea of the vow of poverty. So in this phrase, you know, EJ doesn't say to us, give up your stuff.
No.
What does he say?
Subjugate your material appetites. Bury them.
And if they are buried, then something happens. It's a natural, in the natural course of things, our heart comes out, and we can embrace what?
Grace.
The grace.
Yeah.
Whoa. How do you like them apples?
Well, I think for the first paragraph of the last stage of the voyage, this is the third stage now.
That's where we're at.
Rebirth. This is where we are in the process of this journey. The first paragraph names the existing opportunity. It always tells us what's possible for us to do and what is the method of doing it.
The profundity of this, and maybe it's just me and maybe it was just today, or, you know, I've been a lot of hours, strange work and stuff. And I looked at this morning, I had no time to do this, and I just did it anyway. I had to found my day on this. And I opened it up, I saw that little sentence that, can you, if you slow that down, this other thing naturally comes out.
Right.
What do you think about that, George?
David, ask that question again. I was following you right up until the moment you put me on the spot there.
That's okay. What I was saying is that we, if we, I'm using the phrase subjugate,
right,
appetites,
right,
and then naturally this other thing comes out. He's calling it the
unveiling.
The unveiling of the heart is
right.
The term he's using. But this has just reminded me of 10 conversations you and I have had over the years.
Well, that's right. And actually, as I've been listening to the development of the conversation, and it occurs to me, look, we have two diametrically opposite forces at work within ourselves. In practical work on self, EJ describes this as the Prince of Darkness and the Prince of Light. Each regards itself to be righteous and the other to be evil, regardless of what label we put on it. So what EJ recommends in practical work on self is that first we educate one force, our essential self. Hey, you're a particle of divinity. You possess, you know, your light. Your white light and infinite extension, you always hope, you always love, you always believe. This is a force, and that's the essential self. Our awareness of that force is what we're attempting to bring back from atrophy, to strengthen and develop. The second force, which feels it's also equally righteous and justified, is our historical personality, which becomes subjugated to material appetites and imaginations and all kinds of things. And so as this particular book with these two different aspects of these two forces simply ask us, can you voluntarily pacify one nature in order to facilitate the revelation of the other nature, our essential self? So that's how I'm understanding this.
What I'm, I guess, and we've talked about this a lot, and EJ's made this point as well over the years, is that if we, you use the word pacify, but if we make the will of the machine
right.
passive,
right,
becomes passive, this other thing naturally occurs.
Correct.
George, is what I'm saying.
Correct.
The heart is unveiled naturally, but you got to slow this other guy down.
That's right. We have to educate our machine, and then we have to teach it, just like a child, how to gradually slow down, relax, pass, you know, become more passive where we have, yeah, you're right.
And, you know, I had a client come over today, for a brand new client, and because of the time of day, she had to bring her two boys. And one, I think, was 5 or 6, and the other one was maybe 10 or 11. Within, the younger boy was uncontrollable in a certain way, wild, moving, talking, experimenting, undisciplined, as you're saying. And to me, it was fine. I had no, because to me, it was just, oh, that's a small boy.
Yeah,
that's what they do.
That's energy in a human form.
That's energy in a human form. And that's what these boys do. I'm totally okay with it. But I saw it in terms of this paragraph
mm-hmm.
when I'm sitting there, and I thought, that's what it meant, you know? Can I quiet this guy down? In me, of course, is
yes.
what I meant.
Yes.
Because I wanted him to do whatever the heck he was going to do. So, but the principle I'm trying to bring up right here is that, and I think this is part of the fundamental basis of monastic life, it's saying, in a certain way, all you must do is subjugate.
Yeah. And the last three words of the sentence give you the information you need about how you can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was it that said slow down? Was that you or George? You slow down the machine. Because when you said that, that struck me, the understanding of what EJ has been telling us the last few months about slowing down. And, you know, I thought, oh, okay, there's lots of things that can happen when you're slowing down because I see everybody around me and how the pace, the speedy pace can, you know, affect things not in the most beneficial work way.
Yeah.
And so, but it had an entirely different meaning tonight.
Yeah.
Slowing down. And now all of a sudden it becomes really an important, and the priority of that has just upped tremendously.
I think what he's telling us when he says slow down, I think is precisely what, when you slow down, you start to insert your a new will.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the job we can do,
mm-hmm.
versus, make your essential self, make your heart, what's the term, unveiled or no?
Yes, one whose heart has been unveiled.
So go ahead and make your heart unveiled.
Yeah. Sure.
He's not saying, he says, all you need to do,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Slow down.
Yeah.
And does it its own accord, George. What do you think?
For sure. And you know how EJ summarizes so inimitably at the beginning of these chapters.
Yes.
His summary, so the chapter I had just referred to, Struggle of the Sorcerers, right? Ordinarily, the war of the forces of darkness and of light just happens mechanically within the machine. It is uncontrolled and wasted. We must find
a little closer to your mic, please.
Boy, I'm speaking right into it, but let me
this
see.
This is better.
Okay. So anyway, ordinarily the war of the forces of darkness and of light just happens mechanically within the machine.
Right.
It is uncontrolled and wasted. We must find a way to organize it and make it profitable to our work. And clearly slowing down, you know, they say, why is there never enough time to do something right the first time, but always enough time to do it right the second time?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So, I just, knowing, thank you, Pat, for where, knowing this is the third stage,
mm-hmm.
where are we? That's where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly this pearl comes forth to us.
A golden opportunity laid right in front of us at the very first, I'm going to use the incorrect word here, breath of this transitional stage, which is the third stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not one that normally, if you think about the ebb and flow of the described Bardo journey, the third stage is the stage of reformation of consciousness.
Nice, nice.
And what this says is there is a golden opportunity right in the beginning of the third stage.
I think I'm so inspired by practical work on self. I'm always trying to think of how does this going to apply to my date today,
yes.
tomorrow.
Yes.
So I look at the term appetite, like, we were served dinner.
Oh, yes.
We were served dinner.
Yes.
And, you know, there's the plate in front of me, and I could now, as I reflect on it, I could see my hunger.
Yes.
My desire for that.
Yeah.
Food.
Animal appetite.
It was like working, you know, it was just pulling me toward that plate.
At the ready.
So this says, hey, guess what? If you do this kind of work of subjugation, you do get a prize. You do get that which is more towards your home, in a sense, the true home of your nature.
Now, I have a small example.
Okay.
So, in my last 24 hours or so, I've spent most of that time sitting in front of the computer working on behalf of a client that is extremely out of touch. And
by the way, she did not mean me.
No.
This particular time, okay?
No.
Go ahead.
And you know, I work away for 4 or 5 hours, and then, you know, I'm taking a break, and then I'm looking at the clock on the computer screen, and I'm going, oh, I got another hour before I have to get ready for the class. One more hour before, pretty soon it's like, wait a second. I'm letting this time go by, and I'm not noticing anything.
Good.
There was not a single bit of stillness there. I go,
beautiful.
Hey, you still have the opportunity right now to be still for a moment, you know, to collect yourself to yourself, to pause, to take a breath. That's still possible. That's the thing I keep coming back to again and again. There's been a lot of deaths going on. There's been a lot of sickness going on, and that's my forte. I'm right there with that, the transitional thing. And the reflection back to me is you still are alive in a body and have this opportunity in this human form right now to take advantage of the teaching as it's currently right in front of you. Your life is your teacher. Here it is.
That's right. The
what
life,
are you doing?
Our own life is our teacher.
Yeah. So I just wanted to share that, you know, even though lost in this, you know, mental calculations for this, not a very good client.
But there
thinking
was
of
a,
myself, of course.
Well, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the point.
You know, we know that if it was on behalf of someone else, we would have a different... We would have a different standard. You know what I'm saying? Like when I work on behalf of my other clients, I go fresh. I go not muddled. I take the breath and take the food that I need to be fresh and correct for their behalf, to do their work. What am I doing for myself? 5 or 6 hours at a time in front of the computer? Come on. You know? So it just reminded me, because the last three words say,
yeah,
if so, he wills it. No one else is in charge of this. You know? It's a character sitting right here that's playing this one out.
This idea of stillness and silence,
mm-hmm,
reminds me of an event that happened. It was a circle. You hadn't got here yet. You were in that space.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that this morning.
And where the, you know, suddenly the command was, you know, was exemplified, and when we did those things, it just, the heart was unveiled.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like, see? Of course, took some skill for us and for him to do that sort of thing. So tomorrow, later on tonight, today, I'm going to be in some form of hunger, and I think the thing is to notate how the hunger works, what it feels like, so I can see. You have to note it, not suppress.
No, and it's not a judgment. It's really, it's like note taking. It really is that.
Nice.
It's just,
yeah,
it's just observation without assessment or judgment. It's only observation. It's not analysis.
Right.
And, you know, the observation says, 4 hours sitting in front of the computer. Thank you. Oh, okay.
That's it.
Now I'll take that moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, now I'll take that moment.
So read the second part of the Luke verse again, please.
So the second part of that Luke verse is, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self?
And this is what Pat's demonstrating to us, is that we have an opportunity to gain ourselves back by subjugating, not suppressing. And at this point, I'm getting to a point of, doesn't matter to me whether he meant it or not, but I'm being exact in the terminology. I'm
mm-hmm.
assuming exactness.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses subjugation as a willful act.
Mm-hmm.
Suppression is a reactive
yeah.
event.
Yeah.
So we're allowing ourselves to be, we make the decision in the last part yeah. of that sentence.
Yeah, it says, if so, he wills it.
So if he or she so wills it, then you subjugate,
mm-hmm.
and then this other thing occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Then the 4 hours become an enlivened moment.
Yeah.
And just because the person isn't the way you want them to be or like them to be or any of that stuff, that's who they are. It's
yeah.
just a matter of notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that interesting?
Note-taking.
Yeah.
Well, decades ago, honestly, I was in a study group in Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
Ray and Sarah Walker
mm-hmm.
were the group leaders. And everything was passed on verbally. We did not have study group materials. We didn't have the online with EJ.
No.
But part of it was being able to recall exactly and specifically what the instructions were that had been given, and pass them along exactly to the other person. And one of the things that I recall that was said at that time, now I've forgotten exactly what we were talking about. Oh, good for me. Yes, was that observation could be seen as a form of the scientific method. You don't judge before you've collected all the data. That made sense to me.
And it still does. It makes sense to us.
Yeah.
It's just And you're very good at that, I've noticed over the years. You know, you just, that's just what it is. I judge, and you just say, oh, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
So it's nice to work in that way.
We should check.
How are we doing over there, Dan?
Dan interacting there, but Dan, do we have some commentary or questions or feedback from listeners, participants?
Well, Grant had put in the two names with their definitions as given on the Wings of Chaos site. And Antimatter says, beautiful image of an unveiled heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a beautiful image.
Yeah.
And I guess that it is so pragmatic for me, this particular methodology. It's like, hey, I can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can do that. And if we can take it down from the skies of imagination and just whatever the unveiling of my heart is, that's the unveiling of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be like in the big, glorious, poetic terminology
yeah.
that
yeah.
Dante uses in
yeah.
Paradiso. That's like the end game. That's like all the way. I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I'm not somewhere. And that's what I like about this. It's just so...
I'm going to put us in
Go ahead.
Verse 3.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm ready for that.
And it has been a troubled time for you, and you have slept a troubled sleep. And now you have realized that the apparitions you have seen have not been real and true, and you have seen how they have led you into this final stage of transit. So the potency of coming across the first two verses, which give you the opportunity. And then you get, and here you are.
That's right.
You know, it's like, okay, straight in the face, frank and, talk.
And to continue,
yes.
4, and you shall become drawn toward one or another of the worlds of matter through influences and force of habit.
Mm-hmm. Habit.
And there shall be many lifetimes presented to you. Only one or two shall be required of you, and the rest shall be your desires. Isn't that curious?
Interesting language.
Isn't that curious? But only one or two would be required of you.
Yes.
What does he mean by that?
Exactly. What?
Why does he say required of you and all these other
what's
ones?
What's going on?
So what's going on in that place? And he's saying, okay, here's the work you got to do, and there's all these habits and all of that. What are you going to do, buddy? You know?
Oh, and by the way, I'll present you with this panoply of
right.
opportunity and choice, and most of it will just be fun and games. There'll be something there that is required of you. You think about that word requirements. It's like there has to be a level of commitment before you could actually embrace something that would be required of you. I think about, you know, you want to go to med school and it's required that you take science, biology, what is the thing about the body? Anatomy. You know, you're not going to get out of it if you haven't committed to at least that level. So what is the requirement here? It can't be habit unless you're talking about essential habit.
Which, right.
And if you're talking about the essential habit, is this the place where you have that available to you or not? That's the other part of this. Yeah, we should probably go right on because...
Yeah. It's a long book.
It is a long book.
But it's I just want to reemphasize for myself and for all of us the critical importance of that opening salvo, in a sense.
Yeah.
And the gift that we're given at that time.
Yes.
Let's keep reading then. You want to go ahead or?
5. And once you have made your choice, there shall be no other choice to consider. And now, if not before, you must not enter into a state of desire, no matter what may be presented to you. 6. And now you are preparing for rebirth,
mm-hmm.
because you have not recognized the unfolding of your own consciousness. Kind of throws it back on you.
Yeah.
And now during the refolding of your consciousness, you will have to suffer the results of your sleep by being born into the world created by the reformation of your own primal consciousness formed by your habits and tendencies throughout the ages. Now, just for a moment, take it as given that the lifetime that you're currently living is a construct of your unconscious formed habits, because it's your unconsciousness that formed the habits to begin with, and they have unfolded into whatever it is that you have as your lifetime now. There used to be a methodology with a black box and a simulation carriage crib containment unit, very similar to where we use our computers now, but this was 40 plus years ago. And one of the goals of that type of objective theater is to be able to allow you to come close to the recognition of yourself as the player, the creator, the actor. You know, what relationship do you have to what is supposedly occurring in your lifetime? And this explains why.
Well, it explains why. And I, you know, this has been hinted at throughout what we've been doing for the last 2 years, you know, this concept that the world I'm in is something that I've created, but by the reformation of my consciousness.
Yes.
But there's a huge part of me, from an operable point of view, that just doesn't believe that.
Mm.
You know, it's just like, here's the world, and
I'm
just here. You know?
And it's, I'm just here.
And part of the confusions that flow from that are things like, you know, like one of the subtleties of my appetite desires is that I believe I am owed the desire, whatever it is. You know,
whatever it is.
And that's kind of a subtlety that just, it's there. It's not like I'm directly, but I'm owed it.
Right.
And that takes me away from myself, of course. Good.
So how about if you do 7? Yes.
7.
Yes.
And if you are able to allow yourself to be the void, non-located and pure truth, and you did not reach out for anything, nor did you withdraw from anything, and if you did not try to make yourself still and rooted to anything, then you could be liberated without further rebirth. 8. And if you still cannot recognize these forms as the primal forms of your own consciousness, then begin to visualize the guide as your teacher in the human world and feel devotion without attachment toward him. Another methodology. You can't recognize that this is that consciousness, then okay, here's another method.
Yeah, exactly.
Right away. Here's another. Oh, then grab the guide.
Yep. I'm going to skip 9 and 10.
Okay.
They are explicit in their evolvement of the situation, but I think 11 will do it for us. And the body of seeking rebirth exists without limitations. The descriptive. The body of seeking rebirth exists without limitation. And so it can appear anywhere within the six worlds within one moment of another appearance. And the movement of the body of seeking rebirth is moved by the power of thoughts and of desires. And so any thought or desire will cause you to appear in the corresponding space and time. Now that's higher physics.
Wow.
Yeah. 12. And now that is an advantage to you, because simply by the power of thought and of desires, you can choose rebirth. And you are now under the power of suggestion and influence. This means that my voice can direct you in this fluid state to a better rebirth as I voice the thoughts and desires of liberation.
Wow.
How about that for another methodology?
You are now under the power of suggestion and influence.
Yes.
This means that my voice, and you know, the Book of the Dead, Tibetan Book of the Dead, is, you know, liberation through hearing in the Bardo.
Yes. And in the Bible it said, and then there was the Word.
That's right.
And how do we hear the Word?
Well, I think we have to, one thing we can do is subject our habits and appetites such that the heart is unveiled and we can...
And we can put them in the condition where that can be the consequence. It can be unveiled.
So I get this thing that, and in one of the previous books, and somebody will remember, I think it said, so you should read this over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And just... Yes. Keep reading these
it's
things.
The previous one.
Yeah, I think it was.
It is the previous one.
You just keep, so then keep reading it, because these in it themselves are, the words are alive. If we can, it is a form of prayer. And I know sometimes we don't go there, but it's a form of prayer to read this material and say it in that way. And you say it over and over again, and it's like, beseeching the Lord to allow your hearts to be unveiled. Listen to my words.
So will you read 13? I'm going to listen.
13. And the guide will ask, what do you want to do now? And you must not carelessly answer him. And if you have released your pride and egoism, you shall be able to ask him for liberation in the luminous, clear light of spiritual consciousness. 14. And if you cannot yet ask for liberation, then you must ask for a better rebirth in which you will be able to learn and apply the teaching. There's always another, like, what have we gone through here? We should diagram this. There's like six different opportunities.
Oh, since we opened verse one?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
I
you
think
can
it's
do this,
seven, actually.
Or this, or this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, that doesn't work. Here, try this.
Yes.
And none of them work. And just ask for a little bit better rebirth this time.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a qualified statement. It says, and if you cannot yet ask for liberation, then you must ask him for a better rebirth in which you will be able to learn and to apply the teaching. I love how both of those parts are included there because, it's not one or the other.
Learn
it's got to be
apply.
Both.
So we have an opportunity right now. So we're in the now.
Yes.
And we have the opportunity to learn and apply the teaching.
Yes.
And we have a methodology in the last...
In the last seven,
13
eight verses. Yes,
verses
13 verses. Yeah.
To use a certain thing to liberate us and help apply the teaching, this is how to do it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
15. And if you surrender now to the tendency to flee from the guide and to seek refuge from him, then your rebirth will be in sleep and without choice. It will be a rebirth of habit and of ego.
Now, this is not an easy thing. If you surrender now the tendency to flee.
That's right.
What we're talking about there, and I think all of us have experienced it, is that sometimes you're in those energy cycles, there's so much energy, you wish to flee.
Yes.
And the author is suggesting for us here, if you surrender now that tendency, then something's possible.
Right. And if you do not manage your urge to flee, then what your choices are in sleep and without choice. It's going to be all defaulted to your body of habit of ego.
And
that's where you are when you default to the urge to panic.
The urge to panic and flee.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, if you read this in a certain way, this is not judgmental.
No.
It's just a fact.
It's categorical.
It's just, if this happens, then this happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now you're in that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, this is the result of that. And now 16. Now, you must withstand the sensations and the cognitions which you receive and remain with the guide long enough to ask for a better rebirth and for the process of liberation or for total awakening. Sure, why not? If you can ask for it, take it.
Yeah. You know, we used to... We did the gambling thing up in Reno.
Oh, yeah.
And
yes.
I don't know what it was. I think that one year I know what it was. I was going to training in Reno at a particular hotel, and that was a 3-day training thing for the taxes and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it was a casino.
Right.
And EJ says, well, put $5 on midnight for me. So midnight is on the craps table, double sixes,
mm-hmm.
box cards, you know. And it's like, go for total liberation.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. And there's something in the thrill of that moment that was, it's very unique. And I did do it. And I didn't happen to hit that particular time, but fascinating.
Casino worship.
Casino worship, and that was quite something, I think. So.
I'm waiting for you to read 17.
Okay, we'll read that and then we'll consider where we're at.
Yeah.
17, and even the sensations of the room with two heads may be withstood for a few moments. Concentrate on achieving your rebirth within the pure, clear light. If you cannot yet accept that, then at least form a picture of yourself being reborn within the teaching, so that this will not happen to you again, that you are not able to recognize the truth and thus attain liberation in the pure, clear light of spiritual consciousness.
Yeah. That's lovely, isn't it?
Isn't it?
It just gives you really fabulous confirmation about the fact that even if you cannot stand it for very long, if you can stand it for just a few moments. And the way you do that is by concentrating on achieving your rebirth within the pure, clear light. Now, when I was pregnant with the twins, I needed to go get dental work. And because normally dentists give you anesthetic, when you go to the dentist, and when you have pregnancy, you probably don't want to have anesthetic. I asked for the method to be able to have the dental work without having the anesthetic.
Mm.
And that was the start of that particular practice, which I have continued.
Fascinating.
And the primary element of that instruction is you see the situation as purely cosmetic. This thing is a piece of cosmetology, and that one over there, the dentist, is the cosmetician, and he's going to do a little cosmetic work.
Mm.
It is not you, it is simply the cosmetic thing. That's the frame of reference. So no matter what is going to be occurring between that individual there in the form of a dentist and this individual here in the form of a body getting ready to have their tooth worked on, it is not anything more than cosmetic. That's a frame of reference.
Nice.
And then you have a specific focus. Other than that, you get the situation,
right.
Where am I, what's going on, and now you've got the data. You've got the information about where you are and what's happening. So we've been told we're in the third stage. It's about the reformation of consciousness. And what is the instruction next? Very specific. Concentrate.
Yeah.
Form a picture. And those two parts of how to accomplish the task of withstanding for even a few moments.
The
room
with
two heads. Which I happen to not like at all.
You cannot. So in this particular phase that of transit that we're in, it says, if you cannot yet accept that, which is achieving
mm-hmm.
pure light, then it says at least form a picture
yes.
of yourself being reborn within the teaching. It's not like that. You didn't say attempt to be reborn in the teaching.
No.
That's earlier.
No.
But if you're in this state, you say, well, just form a picture of what it's like to be in the teaching.
Yep.
And that's something that we can do now.
Exactly.
And we're able to. So these are just fascinating phrases that he's put in here, and you know, we've opened the books up a bit, Pat, and Ivan is not here tonight. We've opened this back up in a certain way, and this is a very important book to us. You can see that.
Powerful, descriptive, pragmatic.
Pragmatic, beyond belief. So we're at about that time, but I mean, there's a lot more in this. This is a very interesting book. We're at 18. We'll probably take another week or two on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're probably 4 or 5 weeks away from ending this part of this particular book.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have to put our attention on where to go next,
mm-hmm.
in the next 3 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing over there, Dan? Still cooking with gas over there? Okay.
George, are you finding anything in this meandering that we're doing this evening that strikes fire?
Listen, all of this is hugely reinforcing of what my personal experiences over the past several months have been. In other words, I clearly understand that the guide is nothing more than the white light everywhere, and what we're trying to do is educate ourselves that we are actually a part of that individualized within our own personal experience, but that all of us together are that white light and infinite extension. So as I go through each one of these books and what we've covered tonight, I see how in my personal experience, as my essence develops, it naturally, the center of my gravity naturally gravitates to that, perspective, point
right.
of view, and it becomes easier to look at my mechanicality and say, let's make that the passive force. I'm fine, for me personally, I just, wow, this is all really exciting.
Right, and it is. It really, really is. So I encourage everybody to read ahead a bit and mark down two things. One, the coming paragraphs are continuing in this third stage path,
mm-hmm.
that we know. But also, we should take a note of how does the hunger, the appetite work in us, and what maybe there's something unusual that'll help someone else in their own personal observation
yes.
work.
Yes. Yeah. The practicality of the practical work is practically applied using the teaching of Book 18.
Book 18.
Yes.
And
which I always thought had to do with the, the 18.
Habits.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming this evening. We'll look forward to seeing you next week on Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Thanks for hosting us.
Thank you.
Thank you.